Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
Welcome in, Winning Cures Everything. It is the Thursday, May 12th edition of the show. I'm Gary.
I'm Chris.
And we had some technical difficulties to begin today's show. Of course, that would make sense because I thought I'd be able to get in here and get it rolling fairly quickly. And the computer equipment told me nah. Chris, you doing barbecue today?
I am doing barbecue. As soon as we're done, I'm heading down to Midtown.
Well, I can get down with that. I believe I'll be out there tomorrow on Friday. That is depending upon whether or not it rains, of course. Because
it's not raining tomorrow.
You don't think so?
Nope. Not a chance, baby. It's coming in Saturday, maybe a little late Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon.
Well, I can get down with that. So as long as it doesn't rain on me on Friday night, then I will be there on Friday evening to go see the Spin Doctors. How cool is that, right? Do you remember the Spin Doctors at all?
Yes, I remember. The Spin Doctors are on my playlist. I listen to all the time.
I love the Spin Doctors. My little brother and I had a tape when we were 9, 10, somewhere around there, and we used to. I mean, we wore that thing out. I bet that tape melted in the tape player. I mean, it was Jimmy Olsen's Blues and Little Miss Can't Be Wrong and all that. Oh, we were all over. Yeah. We love that stuff. So yeah, we will probably be there on Friday night. So long as you know things don't get hairy. I know there's like a 70% chance of thunderstorms, but I'm like
tomorrow.
You.
That's what it's looking at the weather right.
It said on Friday night. Friday night. I looked at it this morning. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm sure people want to listen to us talk about the weather, right? We got a lot to discuss. Of course, today we are discussing the Mac West, but we do have two orders of business to discuss. Before we get there, let's go ahead and fire it off. Your boy, Tommy, got him a big, fat deal from Fox to broadcast football games for 10 years, $375 million. And that all he's got to do is call football games. He'll be like the next Tony Romo, only expected to be better than Tony Romo because he's going to be making $20 more million a year than Tony Romo.
But he's not going to make $20 more million a year every year. As soon as Tony Romo's deal's up, this is just like NFL quarterbacks, Gary.
Oh, yeah.
The next deal is always the biggest deal, right?
No,
there's
right.
A reason that these guys are never the highest paid guy for long because the next deal is always the biggest. So the second Tony's deal is up, Tony will get this kind of money because this is what these guys can demand because these TV deals are so lucrative.
Well, Tony's deal won't be up until 2030. So
that's because he signed a big ass deal. And yeah, that's
10-year contract, $17.5 million per year. He did that in early 2020.
I'm gonna bet he's got an opportunity to renegotiate that after a couple of years.
And more than likely.
I don't know. CBS kind of some assholes about their contracts. So
yeah, you are not wrong there. You are not wrong there. We know that with the SEC. Give me your thoughts on this. I would say I'm surprised, but I'm not. You know, like this is interesting.
It's obviously Tommy wants to be around football. That's what he wants, okay? At some point in time, he wants to be around football. There was some talks of him being in consideration for ownership with a couple of different teams and things like that. I think this kills those, which is fine by 90% of everybody that's involved. But, you know, it's just one of those things where he wants to be around the game. This keeps him around the game.
Yeah, I think it works. It says it will work, or Brady will work as an ambassador for Fox with a focus on client and promotional initiatives, whatever that means. Murdoch said, "We're delighted that Tom has committed to joining the Fox team. Wish him all the best during this upcoming season." Brady tweeted he's excited to eventually join Fox, but noted that he still has unfinished business on the field with the Bucks. This is, you know, he made it. So Tom Brady has made over $300 million in his career. And this will be even more than that. Like, he has played for, he's played football for 20 years, and he will make, let's see, after this season, he will have made $317.67 million in his football career. And then he's got another 10-year deal worth $375 million. This is, of course, did you see a lot of tweets about, of course, Tom Brady would go call games for Fox, right? Like it's some kind of, like it was only Fox that was going to give him this massive amount of money because of his ties to Donald Trump and whatever else, right? Like, how ridiculous is this?
Like, hang on now. Troy Aikman and them just called games for Fox, oh, I don't know, for the last 17 years?
Yeah.
And it wasn't a thing? It wasn't political at all? Like, come on, man. This is so stupid.
That's what I'm saying.
They like to pick fights. Folks that don't like Tom.
If ESPN had been able to get this deal done, there is no way they pass on being able to get Tom Brady to call football games.
No chance.
There's no chance. Like, this is one of the white whales. It was Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. And Brady has been really good since he got on social media and everything else. Like, he has turned himself into a much more likable figure than what he was even just, I mean, what, 5 years ago? I mean, people openly root for him the way that they never did before. And I think this is certainly a PR win for Fox. It's big for Tom, for sure, with all the money. But, I mean, my gosh, $375 million over 10 years to call football games. Like, this is funny money at this point. Like, are we getting to a point where this bubble is going to eventually burst, or does it just keep going?
Would only burst when the TV contracts dry up. So, yes, at some point in time, it's going to stop, because I don't think the TV contracts are going to keep going like this. But maybe it doesn't. And until they dry up, the money for the caller guys will dry up.
Stuart Mandel.
I mean, why would it?
Stuart Mandel from The Athletic tweeted something about, wow, you're paying this guy this much money, and it's not going to change a single person that would watch the game or would not. And I don't think that's the case. Like, I am much more likely to watch a game with Tom Brady calling it than I am with anybody else calling it. Like, do you feel the same way there?
Well, no, because I'm not going to watch the Tom Brady game. If the Tom Brady game gets, you know, for some reason the big game on Fox is, you know, a Cowboys-Giants game and both teams are mediocre, no. And it's the, you know, the 4 o'clock game, and for some reason I got, you know, Green Bay-San Francisco and they're two of the top teams in their divisions playing, I'm not watching the game because of Tom. I'm just not, okay? But what it means is when people watch the games, they're more enjoyable. When people watch the big games, they're getting a better experience. I kind of agree that the person that calls the games doesn't prevent me from watching, because – my watching habits are I'm going to watch my teams and or the best games, but it absolutely makes the experience much more enjoyable. And there's something to these companies saying, I'm not just doing this to get more eyeballs, but I'm doing it to get the people that are watching to actually like what they're watching.
And that's a good point. That is a good point.
That, I mean, I never stopped watching Monday Night Football with John Gruden for the last decade.
But you showed
up. But I hated every second of it. I went to bars to watch it where I didn't hear the sound because I just couldn't stand listening to that guy talk.
That makes sense. It makes sense. Hopefully, Tom will not turn into that. I hope that he doesn't just turn into...
There's zero chance. There's absolutely zero chance of that. If you watch... See, people who say, you know, oh, we don't even, he's getting all that money, we don't even know if he's going to be good at that. Those are people that haven't paid attention to the last 4 or 5 years. This guy has a production company. He has made several shows where he is incredibly available, accessible, says things that he wants to say, really entertaining. If you've watched the match at all, you see how well he can talk and be entertaining. He's got no problems being self-deprecating and also jabbing at other folks. I think those are two things that makes somebody likable and agreeable to be around. He can take a joke just as much as he can give one. I think that's important. I think he's witty, and there's nobody that will be able to pick apart the game like he can. He will be doing the exact same things Tony does by showing you this is what the defense is giving you, this is what the defense is looking at doing, this is what the offense should do. And he is going to teach you about the game in doing so.
And that is exactly what you want out of a guy that's a color analyst, right? So
that's
it's
right.
him
that's
and Kevin
the
Burkhart.
Color analyst's job. Yes. Yep. And up until a couple of years ago, Troy Aikman been cashing checks all these years, and he might as well have just been putting a bag over Fox's head and stealing the money, because he literally did nothing. He said he was John Gruden 2.0. He said nothing. And then the last couple of years, he started becoming critical. And he started actually calling guys out for being terrible at their job. And I think that was important. I think that gives him credibility, because if you can say the negative, it trusts me when you're saying the positive. It makes me believe you when you say the positive. You say nothing but positive things about everybody, then I have no reason to believe any of the compliments at all. I just assume they're all lies.
That makes sense. Yeah, you and I have talked about this before. Guys that are nice all the time.
All the time.
Kind of, you know, there's something to that. Maybe not all of it is true, and you don't know what's a lie and what's not, because it can't all be true.
No, so, well, and some of this is like, so I love Herb Street. I absolutely love Herb Street with college. But he has this problem. Like, a couple of years ago, he just refused to be critical of Nebraska. Everybody in the country knew Nebraska was going to be mediocre to terrible. And he just wouldn't go on TV and say, this team is not where they want to be, and I think it's going to be a struggling, trying year. And he came out and he used some weird cliche of, well, they can win the national championship this year. And holy shit, people took that and ran with it.
Yeah,
because
the odds
all
of
you
got to
do
bananas.
Is just they went bananas, and it's just one of those things where, like, come on, man, people listen to you. You have a responsibility to tell them the truth. And if I put a gun to your head and I hook some jumper cables up to your nipples, there's no chance on earth you're telling me you really believe they could win the national championship.
Well, that's
they weren't even competitive.
I think this happened with Herb Street when his kids got old enough to actually play college football, and at that point he didn't want anybody to say anything bad about his kids. So he didn't want to say anything bad about anybody else's. And I wonder if maybe that's
you saying good things or bad things ain't going to stop anybody else from saying good things or bad things. All I want, and there's a nice way to do things, okay?
Yeah.
There's a polite way to do it, but you've got to call balls and strikes. You can't just call everything a strike. You just can't give everybody everything.
Yeah.
Everybody's not the greatest all the time. Because when you actually tell somebody they're great and they are, it doesn't mean anything. Because you told the nine, you know, other guys that are just average to mediocre, the same thing.
Yeah,
that doesn't matter.
Exactly. So the compliments
don't
matter.
I don't think Tom will be that at all. I think he'll be personable. I don't know that he's going to go in there murdering folks. Troy has kind of swung the other way. If you piss him off or he don't like you or he don't like your play, he got no problem now telling you that is garbage. I don't know that we're going to get that Tom, but I think we're going to get an honest, real Tom.
I think if he sees
something he don't like, I think he's going to call it out. But I also think we're going to get great stories. I think we're going to get unbelievable stories about the game, about guys playing in the game, about guys' dads that played in the game that he played with, or uncles that played with, because he's been in the damn league for 24 years. You know, so I think it's going to be great. Now, I'm a Tom fan, but I've also watched him be great at all these other things. Like,
true,
outside of Eli and Peyton, nobody else – in the sports world, not just football, the sports world has been as good as him in SNL. And that's live bullets, man. That is live TV.
That's true. You're not wrong. You were not wrong about that. Let's go ahead and move off of Brady. Let's move over to one of our favorite topics, the Memphis Tigers. The Liberty Bowl renovations are a go. Now, these have been rumored for quite some time. But it is, I mean, they are getting some massive, massive renovations done to the Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. It is not the Liberty Bowl anymore. It is now Liberty Stadium. I've got the video pulled up here that is showing everything. And I'll read you through this. It said, the game has changed and we evolved, and it's showing a bunch of the students and whatnot. It says, be part of our future. And then it shows a redone Liberty Bowl Stadium. And it looks absolutely massive and epic and everything else. If you, and it, of course, they've redone Tiger Lane already. They have redone a lot of things over there in that fairgrounds area. Have you been over there yet? Have you seen what all the work?
Yeah, I was there all day yesterday. I work in Midtown. What are you talking about? I drive by it every day.
Well, I figured as much. They are working on this new entertainment, our sports and entertainment complex. They're going to make it a youth sports haven over there. The news here, the Liberty Bowl, by the way, looked out of place with all of the new stuff that is going in. Everything else was new and redone and renovated, and the Liberty Bowl Stadium, of course, was old, decrepit, you know, it had a lot of issues, needed a lot of work. This thing says elements of the $150 to $200 million renovation with goal of completion prior to the 2025 season, says transformation of the west side with innovative premium seating, hospitality experience within Halo space, family boxes, and student party deck. Now, the pictures look awesome. Like, this is big-time stuff. And you and I talked before we got on the air about all of this. So the Tigers put, why is this our football future? It says, optimizes position in evolving athletics landscape, commitment to sustained competitive and recruiting success, upgrades the fan experience, positive long-term economic impacts for the university and the city. To shorten this up, the truth of the matter is this. You said if they don't do this, they are not getting into the Big 12 whenever they decide to do it again. And even if they don't get into the Big 12, you still had to do this to be able to dominate what's left of the AAC so that nobody can sneak up on you. If you are going to maintain a football powerhouse, you need to keep up with the Joneses regardless of what conference you're in. And I think that this is the first step in doing that. Obviously, they have fixed the – not fixed. They are working on upgrades to the football facilities. They've already redone the basketball stuff. They have redone the baseball stuff, etc. Every other athletic thing on campus has done it. This one is not on campus, and they are finally putting in the money to make it big time. Give me your thoughts here.
Well, yeah, I think that that's exactly what they got to do. There's no reason if they never get into the Big 12 – being Boise is a bad thing, you know. Let's dominate this conference. Every we're football in the South. We know exactly who Boise State is. We know how exactly they good they are every year. We know the players. We follow the program because they are worth following, and everybody in the country that's a college football fan knows it. Even if you don't live in that area or care anything about Mountain West football, and I think there's no reason Memphis can't become that.
You can also get to a point, by the way, of just going independent. Like, and I know that that sounds crazy, but
I think that's crazy for a team like Memphis.
Well, I mean, if you're in the AAC and all of a sudden you've got these other teams that are dropping out, right? You've got the big name guys. It might not be the worst
idea.
But
the AAC is not going to fall. The AAC is not going to fall. There's always going to be a G5 level, and that G5 level is always going to have its hierarchy of the top and the bottom of it. And you'd rather be the top of the – I'll tell you this. I'd much rather be the top of a G5 than the bottom of a P5, okay? Call me and tell me, would you rather be a Kansas fan or a Vanderbilt fan or a Memphis fan? All right, let's have that discussion. Okay. Would you rather win 3 games a year or 2 games a year? Or would you rather win 9 games a year? I don't care about the caliber of opponent. I don't care the guys coming in. Winning football games is fun. Being in competitive football games is fun.
This is true. This is true. I was looking at it more from the aspect of if we do have a split between the haves and the have-nots, right? As we've kind of alluded to for a while, Memphis wants to be one of the haves.
Like, well, I understand that, but like, you don't think – hang on now. You don't think dominating the conference is going to give you the ability to make the decisions in the conference?
Oh, I'm sure it will.
So once the American gets realigned and it's all settled in the wash and the guys that are out and the guys that are in, if you're the number one team in that conference year in and year out or a top 2 or 3 team in that conference year in year out, what you say and what you want goes far more weight than what the new guys say or what the smaller guys say. All right. And so if you want to, if they break away from the NCAA, a section of college football, and you want to do that, I'm going to tell you, if you're the American and you know that your cash cow's ready to leave, you kind of listen to them. You say, hey, how about we all break away? And you start lobbying folks to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I can get with you.
So I do not think this is going to be only the big boys are going to leave. I just don't. I just don't believe that's going to happen.
I think the schools that want to, that have the ability to do so, will be able to do it. They will be afforded an opportunity.
But I think a lot of them are going to have the ability to do it. I don't think it's just your Alabamas and your Georgias and your Ohio States. It's not just going to be the biggest schools in the country.
No, I agree.
There's a lot of these little programs. UAB has put a shitload of money into football. UAB is going to want to compete with the best of everybody.
No, I tend to agree with that. We shall see. The photos look absolutely magnificent. I mean, it's really good stuff. So we'll see what it ends up looking like.
My question is what are they going to do while they're doing it? And I guess they're going to have to do this in phases, because it's not like they got another facility they can go play at for a couple of years.
They can go over to Central High School, I guess.
Oh, Lord. Surely they're not going to do that.
No, I would imagine they'll do it in phases, and they'll work on it in the off season. But it is a renovation. It is not just tear down and start over. So, you know, you may not have the entire stadium available at all times, but maybe that's okay. I mean, who knows? We'll see how they do it. It could be interesting. Let me go on and get these ad reads out of the way. Podcast. Go on and check it out over on YouTube or whatever your favorite podcast app is. You can always find everything you need to know about us over at winningcureseverything.com. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcast and leave a written review there as well. Spotify now lets you leave reviews, and we have got several of them. Thank you to all of you that have already put out 5-star reviews. We certainly appreciate it. Go ahead and do that if you have not. We would like to continue climbing in those Spotify rankings, which, by the way, Chris, I haven't told you this, Spotify has overtaken Apple as our most listened to app, which I never thought I'd see the day, but a lot of people using Spotify now. Really, really interesting.
Yeah.
YouTube. Everybody's rolling in on YouTube. Y'all keep doing the YouTube thing. We appreciate that. Jump into the comments. Jump into the chat. We appreciate that. We want to hear your opinions on all of these teams, all of these different topics that we hit. We would appreciate that. And, of course, you can always find us on Twitter. I am at GaryWCE. Chris is at ChrisBGiannini. And the show is at Winning Cures. DMs are open. Or you can just tweet us in public, whatever. I get a lot of DMs for whatever reason. But you guys can also just put that stuff out there publicly and I'll answer. You know, whatever. Same with Chris. We do the same thing. If you want to see more of me, you can find me over at BetUSTV.com. I have got a ton of content coming up. We're doing a show on the French Open, like betting strategies for tennis next week. We are doing the Preakness Stakes. We are doing, oh God. They're starting a boxing show with TJ and Dan Raphael. I'm pretty excited about this. So, and I'll be talking about some of that as well over there. So go to BetUSTV.com and check it out.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chris, it is time, my friend. We are going to jump into the MAC West 2022 college football previews. And we talked about this the other day. The MAC East was a little bit, we don't expect a lot from them. How's that? The MAC West, however, this is the stronger side of the conference. This is... the teams, how about this? Every single team in the MAC West last year went at least 4-4 in the conference, and the champion only went 6-2. So this is a strong, strong division. Chris, we're going to start off with the Northern Illinois Huskies. But before we do that, give me initial thoughts on the MAC West. You agree with me, this is a much stronger side of the conference.
Well, it's a much stronger side of the conference, but at the end of the day, because of the non-con schedule that all these teams have, and because I think these guys are going to cannibalize each other, I just don't have anybody great. I think everybody's coming out of here with multiple losses.
I could see that. I could see that. That's. I do think – now I've got one team that I'm really high on. I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I might have gone a little overboard on this. But we'll figure it out. We will figure all this out. Let's start off with Northern Illinois. The Huskies, I could not have been more wrong about this team last year. Thomas Hammack is the coach. They went 9-5, lost the bowl game. It was a weird, weird ending to the season against Coastal Carolina. They went 6-2 in conference. Returning production, number two in the country, 87%. They return 88% of their offensive production. They return 85% of their defensive production. And yet, if you look at their roster strength, they are still number 104 in the country. There's not a ton of talent. They did have some pretty big losses here. The wide receiver, Richie, linebacker, Lance DeVoe Jr., the running back, Jevion Ducker, or Jay Ducker, has transferred over to Memphis. You know, you lost the big-time punter that was able to kind of flip the field position there. Their short yardage back, Clint Radkovich, is gone. Like, and then their center, Braden Pattion. Like, they lose what seemed like a lot to me, really important pieces, and yet they bring back a ton of production. So I found that to be odd. Here's what you need to know about the offense. They avoided negative plays. They converted 83%. Of 30 fourth down attempts. Most of their fourth down attempts were short yardage. This is a team that really, really liked to run the football. Rocky Lombardi is the quarterback. He averaged 5.9 yards per non-sack carry last year, threw for 2,500-plus yards and 15 touchdowns. He was way better than he was at Michigan State. My question is, what ends up happening without the wide receiver Richie and without that running back Ducker? They still got dudes, but... You know, it's going to be interesting. They got Ontario Brown at running back. They got Travon Rudolph. They still got some playmakers. They got some things going on offense, and they were able to do things with that running game that were surprising. When you look at the defense, it's a whole different thing. Do you remember how bad that defense was? I mean, they were number 123 in defensive PPA per drive. They tried to fix that a little bit. They went out, they hired a new co-defensive coordinator, Nick Benedetto from Samford in the FCS level. They were dreadful last year, but they were number 24 in allowing only 41% of fourth down conversions. The fourth down conversions, they were plus 42% margin between those two. I don't know that will be replicable again. I don't know that anybody's had anything close to that in quite some time. They had 16 freshmen that played on defense last year, which could be part of the problem as to why they were so bad. 16 freshmen got 160-plus snaps, and that includes 7 linemen. So they could be, or maybe should be, better, but are we sure that trial by fire actually works? I don't know that I can say that. On top of that, they went 7-3 in one-score games last year. They were 5-0 in games decided by 2 points or less or overtime.
That's the stat I was looking at.
Which is insane because their turnover margin was number 100 in the country. Give me your thoughts here, because this team made no sense last year, but you could tell that they were well coached. They were number 19 in penalties per game last year. You hope that experience will help this team improve a little bit, but I don't know that you can really improve on what they did last year, going 9-5 and winning the MAC title. Again, cheers to Thomas Hammack. I've got this team at 7-5. I'm curious what you're looking at with this team.
I've got them 7-5 as well. Exactly the same thing. I think they've got a tough non-con schedule, and Vanderbilt. I think they'll handle. Getting an SEC win will be big for them. But Tulsa's been no joke. Kentucky is obviously a beast. We think they're going to be really good this year. I think in conference, they're going to do really well. I think they could win 5-6 games in conference and, whatever. But all those one-score games scare me, because at some point in time, all we need is the ball to bounce a little bit funny one way or the other.
Exactly.
And half of them, and their record massively swings. Massively swings. Still think they're a good team. They're obviously a well-coached team. You talked about the penalties. That's a coaching thing. That's all about discipline. Lost a lot of talent, bringing some new guys in. We'll see if the new guys are as good as the old guys. And, you know, 7-5 is exactly where I got them.
I've got them actually 6-2 again in the conference.
Yeah, see, I thought the same thing. I got one coin flip game. I basically have them 4-2-1, and I got a coin flip game in there. But that's kind of it.
Yeah, I've got them losing to Vanderbilt, but it wouldn't shock me if they did beat Vanderbilt. I've got them losing to Tulsa. It wouldn't shock me if they beat Tulsa.
That's right. I think they'll split that series. Like, this is the math I'm using. Is I don't know that they'll win this game. I don't know if they'll win that game. But I don't think they'll go 2-0 against Tulsa and Vandy. I also don't think they'll go 0-2 against Tulsa and Vandy. That's kind of how I'm figuring this out.
Makes sense. The defensive line looks a little weak. But again, we're doing this based on like recruiting rankings and everything else. The back seven looks good. Like I know they got some good talent in the back seven, but I'm curious about the defensive line. Again, they had 16 freshmen play 160 plus snaps on defense. It was trial by fire. It was you get in here and we are going to start playing immediately. And they did just enough. The defense was not good. You're going to need that offense to have that same kind of success because, like, their PPA margin last year was number 93, and yet their offensive PPA per drive was number 11. The defense was number 123. Like, you couldn't have a more vast difference between the two. So we'll see what they end up doing this year, but we're both looking at about 7-5-ish, and I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to – we're going to move on to Central Michigan and the Chippewas. Of course, Jim McElwain's bunch. They went 9-4 last year, got their first win over a P5 team since 2017 when they beat Washington State in the Sun Bowl, and that was a last second game. They looked like the more athletic and more physical football team against Washington State, which is a bit surprising. They had to hire a new offensive coordinator this year. So they went out and they got Paul Petrino, which could be interesting. They got their quarterback Richardson back, along with the nation's leading rusher Lou Nichols. They got to develop some wide receivers because they lost Khalil Pimpleton there, along with Ja'Cory Sullivan. But Dallas Dixon being back definitely helps. He had 15.4 yards per reception last year, 8 touchdowns. You got to find somebody that provides the explosiveness that Pimpleton did. When it comes to punt returns, everything, they didn't have a single other guy return a punt other than Pimpleton last year, and he was explosive. He averaged over 19 yards per punt return, and he had 2 touchdowns. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. Along with that, you got to figure out what's going on with the defense here. The defense was pretty good, but you got to figure out who replaces the defensive ends, Hairston and Sadiq. They combined for 38 tackles for loss and 12 sacks last year. You're also replacing linebackers and defensive backs. Their roster strength right now is number 124 in the country, which is not great. The offense is number 65. That's pretty good. It's high up in the MAC. I think they're going to be fine. They won 7 of 8 down the stretch in 21, including that Sun Bowl win. They went 4-1 in one possession games. You got to figure, you know, can they replicate that? Because that's going to be interesting. You know, can the new guys limit explosive plays more than they did last year? I don't know. They were number 78 in defensive explosive rate. That's going to be, I don't know, that's tough. They do return defensive end Thomas and Coombe, and they do return defensive tackle Jacques Bristol. So this is a team that, you know, you lost a, by the way, they did lose a second-round offensive tackle, Bernard Raymond. So they lost him, and then they lost their right tackle, Luke Godecki, along with their safety, Alonzo McCoy. So they've got some big holes that they got to fill. But, man, the way Richardson played last year and the way that that offense moved with Lou Nichols, I am high on this team right now. Brother, I've got them going 9-3. Like, I think.
Well, they went 9-4 last year. I mean,
yeah. They're projected SP plus. Their SP plus record is 7-5. They went 8-5 against the spread last year. So it's not inconceivable that they could go, you know, 9-3 again this year. They were 8-4 heading into the bowl game last year, but I look at this schedule and the way that it sets up, like, yeah, I think they're probably going to lose at Penn State. They're probably going to lose at Oklahoma State. I think most everything else is winnable. So my only other loss is at Toledo.
Yeah, there's a really good chance they could go 10-2 if they want it, you know, if everything falls right. I'm with you. I like the addition of Petrino there. If he can bring, you know, Daddy's offense that we have seen be unbelievable in college football to a G5 school, man, look out. Look out, because that thing is explosive. And you know, I wonder, can you install it in 1 year with you know, younger, inexperienced guys kind of around? You talk about the offensive line, stuff like that. But I think they have potential to be real good. I have them 8-4, but that's because I think this conference, this side of the conference, every conference game, while I think they could win them all, I also think they could lose two of them just because I think it's going to be a meat grinder. I think week in and week out between, you know, you've got them, you mentioned Toledo, you've got Northern Illinois, you've got, you know, Eastern and Western Michigan. I think this conference, this division is a meat grinder. And I think it's going to be real hard to just go undefeated through it.
No, so I've got I don't think you're wrong. They do play at Toledo.
I got no damn idea what games they'll lose. ask me right now, I don't know.
They play at Toledo. They play at Northern Illinois. And they've got at Eastern Michigan. The other road conference game is at Akron. And I'm feeling pretty strong that they'll win that one. But, again, we don't really know what to expect from Joe Moorhead's bunch. So, I mean, you never know. Like, the MAC is always young, crazy.
They're green, and yeah, I mean, inexperienced. That's what we know.
But if there is anybody that would be able to develop wide receivers fairly quickly, I would trust a Petrino.
Trust a Petrino. That's right. No, that's what I'm saying. That offense has potential to be
really good.
Real on fire. And maybe not this year. Maybe not this year. That might be putting the cart before the horse.
But I don't know.
If they can hang on to them, they can build.
With Lou Nichols and you got, good gracious, Daniel Richardson, the quarterback back, like, you got experience at the points where, you know, it really matters. You got some leaders on this team. They got a strong shot to be really good this year. Really good.
Now here's the other thing. That's a lot of hope that he might be his daddy. And we have seen many a times guys – aren't nearly as successful as their daddies. So let's just understand.
Well, his brother.
That is hope. I'm sorry, brother. I'm so sorry. No, but not everybody is the same as their family.
No, you're not wrong. You are not
just
wrong.
Just because one guy's real successful doesn't mean the other's going to be. But their potential is there.
It certainly is. We will move on to the Toledo Rockets. And Jason Candle has continued to underwhelm year after year after year. They went 7-6 last year. They were 8-5 against the spread. They went 5-3 in the conference. Had some big losses, like some borderline NFL guys, linebacker Jonathan Jones, cornerback Samuel Womack, their center Bryce Harris is gone, wide receiver Bryce Mitchell, the safety Tyson Anderson, cornerback Justin Clark, and the safety Saeed Holt are both out. This is a team that always has talent, right? Most of the talent this year is on defense. They're number 43 in roster strength. They're overall number 81 because the offense is number 101. They have, looking at the offense, quarterback Daquan Finn was a freshman last year and played really, really well. 18 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. But the offense was 97th in third down conversions and 99th on fourth down conversions. You got to look at some of the transfers that they brought in. They brought in the running back Boone from Maryland and wide receiver Mikel Barkley from TCU. Could those guys provide a little more consistency on offense? Possibly. They had a 55-45 rushing to pass balance last year. I wonder if that stays the same this year because they ran a lot, but if they trust the quarterback a little more this year, that might open that thing up. That's what Jason Candle kind of was known for a little bit. Their projected SP Plus record is 9-3. But again, they always underperform their SP Plus record. Like, this is the best recruiting team in the MAC every single year. What drove me crazy this team went 7-6, and yet they were number 7 in PPA margin last year. They should have been a lot better. A stat that drives me insane, they were number 13 in turnover margin, which is awesome. But they were dead last in the FBS in penalties per game. Like, that will kill you every time. Looking at the defense, they finished 14th in sack rate, 16th in overall havoc rate. The co-defense coordinator, Craig Kuligowski, who used to be at Miami and went to Alabama for a little bit, his hiring in 2020 has worked great. The front seven does look explosive again, but you got to figure out, like, can the D limit the big plays? They gave up 165 plays of 10-plus yards last year. They got big names. They got Devin Maddox back as a wide receiver. They got safety Nate Bauer in, defensive end Deshaun Johnson. You got to clean up the penalties. You got to get the passing game going a little more. The offensive roster strength is a little weak, but with Finn again in his second year, he should improve that 57.6% completion percentage. They were 1-7 in one-score games in the last two seasons, and their kicker, Thomas Klukey, was only 14 out of 24 on field goals. You got to improve special teams. You got to get better in the margins in order to be able to have one of those 9-3 seasons like they're predicting. I think this team's going to be good. I mean, they've got an easy enough schedule. I say easy enough. I mean, we know this side of the conference is a little bit stronger. But they're non-conference. They've got LIU, UMass, at Ohio State, and at San Diego State. They should get at least two of those. They could compete with San Diego State. So, I mean, if
you think this team's better than we think.
I've got them losing to San Diego State. I've got them 8-4. So,
okay.
You know.
All right. I'm a little bit more pessimistic, I guess, about all these teams. I think I'm one game behind you on all of them. I've got them 7-5.
Okay. That's well, you had excuse me, NIU at 7-5 too, right?
Yes, Northern Illinois.
Okay.
Yes, oh, you had them 7-5 also?
Yeah. Yeah. So we're about the same. So I had Central Michigan at 9-3. You had them at 8-4. But you like Toledo at 7-5.
7-5 also.
So yeah, I've got them 8-4. I think, like, I don't have them quite where SP Plus has them projected, which is Bill Conley's metric. But I do think, you know, I will tell you this. I think Western Michigan is going to drop off this year. Ball State is going to drop off quite a bit. They should be able to handle Bowling Green. At Eastern Michigan could be a little tricky, but that's maybe only because I trust Chris Creighton. We'll talk about them in a minute. You know, the other side of the conference, they got Buffalo, Bowling Green, and who am I missing? Kent State. So, you know, I mean, they get Kent State at home. Like, I think the schedule sets up for them to have a pretty decent year. They could certainly win the MAC this year. Like, but they could do that every year. So we'll just have to see. We'll see what they do. What do you think do you think Jason Campbell, there was talk in the offseason that he was being kind of recruited to take the Miami offensive coordinator job. Do you think that would have been a smart idea for him?
No.
Like, with the way that things have gone, I mean, it would have been a raise for sure, but the way that things have gone, like, not to be cliche, but the candle is kind of burning out on Jason Candle a little bit. You remember how much hype there was for him after God, what's the Iowa State coach's name? I just went blank. Matt Campbell. After Matt Campbell
Matt
left.
Campbell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So once he left Toledo, because he did a great job at Toledo, Jason Candle came in, had a really good first year, and everybody thought, oh, this is the next one. This is the next guy. And it has not been that at all.
Yeah, but hang on. That Miami OC job, that job equivalent will always be there. There'll be 9 Power 5 jobs looking for OCs all the time. Okay? So that's not anything where you got to run and jump at. If you don't take it now, that job's never coming to you. Okay? He can always go and do that.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. Even if you get fired, you'll still have a job. Like,
yep.
That's okay. I guess that makes
sense.
If you think
he's good enough of a play caller and an offensive developer, then somebody will hire him.
That's true. I was looking at it as maybe a chance to take that job, and then that can get you a P5 job quicker than.
But the problem is if no, because you got to look at the resume, man. If you're gonna hire him for a P5 job, but he wasn't successful at Toledo, and the guy before him was successful at Toledo, and that guy is now moderately successful at P5. Why would you take a chance on the guy that wasn't successful at the Toledo job and then was an OC at a big boy school that might be ramping up? How much of that is talent, and how much of that is him?
Okay.
I think those questions are always going to be there. They're just always going to be there to try to get him a Power 5 job. But there's nothing wrong with if you can't be great at Toledo in 3 or 4 years and you end up an OC at one of these monster schools with huge budgets and you make a gang of money, okay. Like, that's a great living. Why do you have to be the head coach? There's only so many of those big boy jobs out there.
That's a valid point. You do have a valid point there. We will move on to the Ball State Cardinals. Write my time down here. Ball State. Last year, everybody thought was going to be a big, big season for the Cardinals and head coach Mike New. But the truth of the matter is, they went 6-7. They were lucky to make a bowl game. They went 4-4 in conference. But last year, they were number one in returning production from a team that went, 7-1 in the COVID shortened season? Like, they played really, really well. And then last year, just did not turn out the way that anybody expected it to. They lost their quarterback, Drew Plitt. They lost the wide receiver, like a longtime star wide receiver, Justin Hall. Safety Bryce Cosby is gone. Both linebackers, Thomas and Albright, are gone. The right guard, Curtis Blackwell, out of here. This is not good. Like, they are number 127 in the country in returning production. It's not good across the board. Like, their roster strength overall right now is number 125 in the country. That is, bottom six in FBS. Definitely not good. They do have, some guys that are sturdy. You got wide receiver Johannes Tyler. They got running back Carson Steele, linebacker Clayton Cole, cornerback Amici Uzodinma the second. They have a lot of efficient pieces on offense. And their new quarterback, John Paddock, has at least played some snaps. He got 48 snaps last year. But there's no proven playmakers on offense. Now, can you develop some? Absolutely. They were insanely balanced last year. Like, this, I looked at this. They had 444 rushes last year to 440 passes. So they were 50-50 rushing and passing, but they only averaged 4.98 yards per play. That was number 113 in the FBS. You got to improve consistency. You got to be more explosive on offense. And then the defense. It does not get better on that side. They lost 6 of 8 snap leaders at linebacker. Their top three defensive backs are gone. 2 of their top three offensive linemen are gone. They only brought in 2 defensive transfers. So this will certainly be a youth movement, which New has done. And it, capped off with that 2020 season that was, 7-1, ended up winning the bowl game. It was great. But is Ball State just going to be one of those teams that has to rebuild and then every 4 years they get a chance to compete for the conference title? It certainly looks like that's the direction he's going. They got 5 defensive linemen with over 200 snaps last year, but only 2 linebackers and 3 defensive backs. And that is from a defense that was, that was bad. They have got to figure out something in the secondary this year. Brother, they were number 100 in defensive PPA per drive, but they were also number 108 in offensive PPA per drive. Like, it just makes no sense. They returned basically everybody last year. The offensive line injuries hurt them quite a bit last year, but the defense was so bad. There was nothing, really, that they were good at other than their turnover margin was number 25 in the country, and they were number 22 in penalties per game. Like, they were that stuff that's really well-coached. So, they're a well-coached team, I guess, fundamentally, but without real playmakers, I don't know that I expect any kind of improvement. They went 6-7 last year and lost the bowl game. I've got them at 4-8, and I think that might be generous. Like, where are you looking for this team?
All right, so we differ a little bit here, too. I've got them 5-6, one game better than you. How'd you get to 4-8? Oh, I guess I 5-7.
Yeah, right, 5-7. Yeah.
Somehow I didn't count a loss somewhere. I got them 5-7. And I don't think they're going to be great, but I don't, I think that's a little over market correction. Like last year, we thought they would be world beaters and win this conference. And this year, like, there's a world where 5-7 could be the worst team in this division. But, you know, I mean, I don't know that it's just going to swing that far. I think at some point in time, they're going to level out. They're going to find a way to win a couple of ball games that we're not expecting. And, but some of that's because I think all these teams are capable of dropping a game, winning a game. Like, I just don't see anybody as a juggernaut here.
I mean, you're not wrong there. You're not wrong on that. I looked at their schedule. They play, these are their road conference games: at Central Michigan, at Kent State, at Toledo, at Miami of Ohio. And then you've still got Western Michigan at home, which, you know, Western Michigan is losing a lot, but I still think they've got a better roster than Ball State. They got to play at Tennessee. They've got at Georgia Southern, which I've actually got as a win for them because it's early enough in the season. You got to play Northern Illinois at home. Like, your other non-conference win that I believe is UConn and Murray State. Like, you got those. But, I mean, this is a rough stretch that they got to go on. You do get Eastern Michigan at home. And you get Ohio at home. So, you know, could they win both of those? Absolutely. But I just did. Man, they lost so much last year, and I just have not.
It's just, it's, I guess where you and I differ is I don't put that much weight on home field advantage for all these teams. I've seen way too many of these teams. It's not like 100,000 strong are going to be out here. Okay?
You're not wrong.
I just don't think the fact that, oh, well, they're just going to lose all their road games, like their only possible wins are home games. That doesn't make any sense to me because I watch it happen every year.
That's okay. I can get with you. It's not so much the road home stuff. It is, man, it was already pretty difficult anyway going against those teams that are a lot more stacked than this roster. And then you put in that added element of, you know,
you think those rosters are more stacked, just like we thought Ball State was stacked last year. But we don't know. We don't know until they start playing.
Yeah, no, you're correct. You're correct. We whiffed on Ball State quite a bit last year. I think I had them going 8-4. And they, I mean, they went 6-6, but, you know, still not quite up to expectation last season. They were not good across the board, any of the stats. So,
I mean, I'm one game different than you. But I would bet that I would have, if I had to bet right now, I bet there would be more likely to go 6-6 than 4-8. Like, I think they'd win one more game than I think they would over lose a game than I think they would.
So you're a big believer in Mike New, huh?
I don't know that's a big believer though. Like, 6-6 is not a big believer in anybody. Six in a MAC team? Come on, what is that a believer in?
That's a believer in every team is the exact same. So they'll basically all end up 6-6.
But I've said that. Like, they're not all going to end up 6-6. But I think at best a team is going to win two games more than they lose in this situation, this division. Anybody being 3 or 4 games better than everybody else.
That's
this side of the ball.
It's a valid point. It is a valid point. Let's jump into Eastern Michigan. We got two more that we got to knock out here. The Eastern Michigan Eagles, and you know how much I love Chris Creighton. Went 7-6 last year, which was really good, really good for them. Went 4-4 in the conference. They were 5-8 against the spread. They had some really unlikely wins, just random stuff. You know, Western Michigan, everything else, where they were winning games by like 1 point here. You know, Creighton is the offensive coordinator too here, so if the offense was good, it played well on him. Ben Bryant, the quarterback, transferred back over to Cincinnati, and they brought in Taylor Powell from Troy to be the new quarterback. Can he be as good or efficient as Bryant? I don't know. That's a lot to ask. The passing game was efficient, but they were number 82. In rushing success rate last year. They need offensive linemen to step up here. As far as the guys that they lost, one of the big ones, Mike Van Hoven, the center, he was a key part of that offensive line. Without him, you know, we'll see. We'll see what they look like. They do return Jose Ramirez on the defensive line, defensive tackle there. Wide receiver Hassan Baden, left guard, Saidi Sow, and Darius Boone, the running back, are back. So you've got guys that that have a lot of experience there. The defense, they got 14 players returning with 200-plus snaps each. But, again, the question is, are any of them good? They were number 113 in PPA per drive on defense last year, number 127 in defensive rushing success rate allowed, defensive passing success rate allowed, at number 115 in the country. That ain't good. That is, I mean, I don't even know how to quantify how bad it is, because we saw the same thing with some of these other teams. Like, some of these defenses were just putrid. And they just gave up explosive plays all the time, et cetera, except for these guys. They were number 15 in explosive play rate, which was crazy. My question here is, has Creighton already peaked as the coach? Now, they've made four bowl games since 2016. Before he showed up, the last winning season was in 1994, and they had only made two bowl games in their existence. This is a really, really difficult job. The roster is always bottom 30 nationally, but as far as team strength with experience and everything else tied in, they're sixth in the MAC this year. If you can keep the offense rolling, that's one thing, but the defense still has to be better. This roster does not show me a bowl game, but, you know, my trust in Chris Creighton might actually get me there again, which, by the way, I need to bring this up. Their defensive passing game coordinator and their safeties coach for the last 7 years, Fred Reed, just died on Sunday. So what exactly was his role? How much does that play in? Does the team fight, you know, for his memory? Or, you know, I'm curious what something like that does for a team like this. Do they have this crazy year because they lost him in the offseason? I'm curious about that. And there's no news on that, by the way. They said it was a medical emergency, and it's, you know, it's a shame to hear that. We, you know, thoughts and prayers, the typical cliche thing, but obviously thoughts are with the team and the family and everything else with Fred Reed. But overall, this is not a greatly built team. You know, I love Chris Creighton. I couldn't get there. I've got them 5-7, but I mean, if they made a bowl game, it would not surprise me. Because it's the MAC. What do you think here?
I think this team is going to be up and down. I think it's going to be – I think they're going to struggle. I think they're going to struggle to look consistent offensively and defensively. I don't know that they do anything great. That's my biggest problem with this team. I don't know if there's anything that they're really, really good at.
The only thing they were good at last year was their passing success rate was number 17. Their rushing success rate was number 82. But they lost their quarterback. So, you know, when he transferred over to Cincinnati, Taylor Powell was not great in Chip Lindsey's offense at Troy. So, you know, he's got talent, but does it show here? Like, can Creighton coach him up?
I gave him 5-7. I got no idea if that's close, if that's good. There's nothing and I don't mean to be insulting, there's nothing that they do on paper and last year on film that I would use the word impressive.
I've got an idea that they could be all right. So they play Eastern Kentucky. They've got Buffalo at home. They've got UMass at home. They play at Akron. You know, those are some of the wins that I see. I even gave them a win over Toledo just because it would be the most, you know, Chris Creighton thing ever and the most Jason Candle thing ever. So that's how I've got them to 5-7. But, like, you tell me that they beat Northern Illinois or Ball State or anybody else. Like, it makes sense to me because Chris Creighton is such a good coach. Proof of that, by the way, turnover margin last year, number 43. Penalties per game, they were number one in the country with the least penalties per game. They do not beat themselves. Like, but I don't know. I don't know how to quantify that into wins, right? Like, they're not as talented as some of these other teams in the division. So, you know, so long as they don't beat themselves, like, you're going to be able to find another winner here, right?
Yeah. Some of these teams I have with a very similar record are one or two games better than them. And it's, you know, do I think they're going to be consistent? No. But do I think they're good? Yes. Like, I think that they show flashes of either being a really good defensive team, and if they can just keep the scoring under control, they can win those games. Are teams that can score well, and if they can just get stops here or there, the ball bounces their way. Like, I think they show positive aspects on that. I really can't figure out what Eastern Michigan's good at. I think that's the one thing that makes me, if I was going to give no pick on anything for this team, this would be the, or in this conference, the whole conference, I'd have been like, this is the one team that I don't know anything about that I can honestly say, I think this, and I think that that's actually real. I don't know. I just, and that's just being honest. I know that's a terrible analysis for anybody listening to try to actually, but that's, I don't know. I'd rather not lie to you. I don't want to do some hyperbole thing and be like, oh, I think they're going to go 8-4 and try to sell you a bunch of bullshit, or, you know, talk trash and say they're going to be terrible. I don't know.
It's a fair point. Last team on the docket, the Western Michigan Broncos. Tim Lester last year took this team to an 8-5 record. They went 6-6-1 against the spread. They won their bowl game, absolutely blew out Nevada. And after that, the quarterback, Caleb Ellaby, and their wide receiver, star wide receiver, Sky Moore, both decided they were going to leave early for the NFL draft. And Sky Moore got drafted, and Caleb Ellaby did not. But they lost a lot of other dudes as well. Wide receiver Jalen Hall transferred to Western Kentucky. The tight end Anthony Torres transferred to Toledo, stayed in conference there. Defensive end Ali Fayad, the nose guard Ralph Holly, A.J. Thomas, the linebacker, center Mike Caliendo. I mean, they lost some stud dudes. Returning production, they are number 124 in the country, only returning 49% of their production, and they are dead last in offensive returning production, 27%. That ranks number 130. The defense, a little bit better, number 53 in the country at 70%. The roster strength is still pretty good because they have recruited really well for a MAC team. Tim Lester's done a good job. The running back, Sean Tyler, like, he's back. The wide receiver, Corey Crooms, is back. Sam Houston State's left tackle, Elisa Anderson. I believe that's how you say that. He is coming in, and he should be a hoss for them on the offensive line. They got Braden Fisk back at defensive tackle, cornerback Dorian Jackson back, linebacker Zaire Barnes. Looking at the offense, without Ellaby, you know, what is this team? Like, I don't know who starts between Salopek and Hrabowski. On top of that, in five seasons, Lester has really only had two starting quarterbacks. Like, will the efficiency drop off? Because Caleb Ellaby was a playmaker. I mean, he was awesome. This team passed the ball 62% of the time last year. They had a 62-38 split. I'm curious if Lester changes his philosophy if he can't find a quarterback that he trusts. They need to replace four of their top six pass catchers, so that's certainly not good for an offense that throws the ball that much. And then looking at the defense, you know, this defense was not bad. They were number 7 in the country in defensive passing success rate allowed, but they were number 124 in explosive play rate. If you look at it, like, they rank number 92 in 20-plus yards plays allowed, which is crazy because of the passing success right there. But there are playmakers at every level of this defense. The question is, can they actually play together? My keys to the season here are the defense has to limit the big plays and yet maintain their third down defense, which was number 3 in FBS last year. The offense has got to replace Ellaby. They need new receiving threats to establish themselves. The running back, Sean Tyler, is probably going to be a hoss here. They need consistency. This team upset Pitt last year and then got stomped a couple of games later at home by Ball State, who was not very good. Just play with consistency. That's what I'm looking for here. I've got them going 7-5 based on roster strength alone. You know, like, I think they can win at San Jose State. I think they can beat New Hampshire. I think they can beat Eastern Michigan, Ohio, Miami of Ohio, Bowling Green. Like, these are all teams that, talent-wise, this team should be better than. I've got them 7-5 because I trust Tim Lester. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they miss a bowl game this year if the quarterback doesn't hit. Like,
So I got them 5-7. This is the biggest one we're against, because usually we're one game apart, and now we're two. Listen, now you're going to besmirch the good name of the San Jose State Trojans. Come on. No, I'm not doing that. This is a hard non-con schedule right here. I mean, outside of New Hampshire, they got Michigan State, they got Pitt, they got San Jose State. That's tough. But you rang the bell at the very end, the last thing you said. it's all going to come down to the quarterback they pick. And is he the right guy? And here's the problem. If he's not the right guy, by the time you realize he's not the right guy, how many winnable games have you lost? All right? So because the schedule is real hard early, let's say you beat Michigan State, you lose to Michigan State, you get walked. Then let's say you win a game against Ball State. Then you get walked against Penn State. And let's say you lose San Jose State. Then you beat New Hampshire. Have you figured out if your quarterback is good yet or not?
No, not really. Not really.
You're not going to – yeah, but when you're playing these real good teams and or these really bad teams, you're not going to be able to judge your guy. You're just not. If I was in a quarterback battle, I would be going to my AD – and I'd be telling them, look, I don't want stars and scrubs at the first half of the schedule for non-cons, okay? I know we got a bunch of pay-for-wins. These big boys are going to cut us a check to kick the shit out of us. But I can't be playing New Hampshire. I need to find a team. And I guess San Jose would be your best test, right? That's your most even playing field that you're going to find probably.
Well, and Ball State, I guess.
You get Ball State second game of the season. But, like, I you're right about that. I just feel like if you get it wrong, it could go real south real fast. Because by the time you're making the change, you could be four losses into the season already.
Yeah.
And you got half the season left. And then you got to hope the next guy, A, picks up the offense, or what if you were right all along and the next guy's worse than the first guy? And you just don't know. When you have an unknown, like a low star, not highly recruited quarterback, battle going in, you just don't know enough about these guys until they see live bullets, until you get them on the field and you start getting them against live competition. You just can't practice this. It's just not possible to find out in practice.
Yeah, what you hope for is that one of them establishes themselves in fall camp.
Early.
Yeah.
Real early. Yeah, I'm talking dominates. And you never want this, but you kind of want the other guy, if he's not going to be the dude, to kind of fall to pieces. Because you just don't want the question mark. You don't want it to be tight, because then you're in game four or five against San Jose State and you're trying to figure out, shit, which one of these dudes do I put out here? Who do we go with? What are we doing?
Yeah, because we always talk about coaches know everything.
Let's say they're two. Yeah,
but they don't.
Be 2-2 at that point and you don't know what you're doing. No, and I can't say if I was the coach, I would know either. Like, if these guys are really close, some of these guys, it's tough. It's hard. That's why they get paid a lot of money to do it. They got to make these decisions. And if you're wrong, if you make the wrong call, it could go south early. And that's the only reason it's a 5-7, because I don't know enough about either one of these quarterbacks. And I feel like if you're flipping a coin right now, it doesn't matter where the coin lands. I think they're going to second guess it, which means at some point in time, they're going to try to pivot to try to do something different in the middle of the season. And I just don't think that ends well. And I don't know that that's a bad coach. I think every coach would struggle with that. I think every one of them would.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't blame the coach for that situation. I don't blame the kids for that situation. It's just a situation where you just want to have a – listen, my team, my LSU football team is dealing with this right now. I think we got three guys that are going to be neck and neck all the way up. And if Brian Kelly makes the wrong call on the wrong dude, the season could be over by week five.
I mean, it could be over by, like, week three.
I guess you're right if you're talking about trying to win a national championship, because you lose two games at the ballgame. But, like, that's the thing that you got to deal with when you've got a quarterback battle. You got a school like Ole Miss, they brought in a transfer, they know who their guy is. He ain't competing with anybody, okay? They can say all the camp stuff they want to say about, oh, this other guy is looking good. That's all bullshit, okay? The big five-star kid that got transferred in, he's going to start. He's going to play. That's the end of the story. Like, they know who the quarterback is. I'd rather have that than a quarterback battle.
True, true. By the way, let me correct you on something. San Jose State is the Spartans, not the Trojans. Apparently, they frown on the Trojans.
I'm sure.
In case there's any San Jose State fans.
That's on me. That's just on me.
It is all good. All right.
Hey, we've talked San Jose State more than any college football podcast in the country.
I think you're right.
I'll put my name on that.
We talked a lot, especially.
I just got that wrong.
especially with Nick Starkle at quarterback, right? Like, we talked quite a bit about them, man, 2 years ago and last year.
Yeah, now they kind of fell to pieces. Last couple of years, we've won some money on them.
Now you got that right. You have got that right, brother. Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
Nope, I'm done.
All right, let's go ahead and get out of here. You guys, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and hopefully, all of your tickets cash this week. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. Visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.